Hey, you want that to go?
And for some takeouts on stories we're following this week, we want you to stay on top of healthcare, of course. The public option, Todd Zwillich joins us, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Todd, it was once dead. Now it seems to be alive. As someone described on the program earlier this morning, the Democrats have developed a backbone on the public option. How does it look at this point?
Well, they have developed a backbone, I guess, but mixed signals, especially coming out of the House. On Friday morning, John, there were reports that Speaker Nancy Pelosi has realized that she doesn't have the votes for the so-called robust public option based on Medicare, the one the liberals really want, and that she was abandoning that in favor of sort of a what a Democrat anyway would describe as a weaker public option.
But something closer to the Senate bill.
Well, they wanted to, the Democrats in the House wanted to bat that away really quickly, so they sort of called a news conference and made sure that not only the Speaker was there, but the rest of the Democratic leadership, including the whip, James Clyburn of South Carolina, who's the man who's responsible for rounding up every single head, every single vote for any one of these positions. And he was asked, Mr. Clyburn, you know, what is the texture of this? How is it going as you try to get members to sign on to a public option? Tell us what that's like. Here's what he said.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to publicly discuss my anxieties.
Anxieties.
It's nice
is
you
right.
Can help him out with that there, Tom. Yeah.
Anxieties is right as they try to find out which version of the public option to go with. Now, Nancy Pelosi was asked the question, have you abandoned the robust public option? And she said, no, absolutely not. The reports aren't true. We're still going for it. But then at the same time, she started to make a justification for going for a different version of the public option, one based on so-called negotiated rates. And again, the only difference between those is one is based on Medicare. The other is, yes, there's a public option, but you have to negotiate the same way private insurance negotiates. It's kind of like a level playing field. So on the one hand, the Speaker says, no, we haven't given up. And on the other hand, she says this.
This is about the end game now. It's not necessarily because there's no philosophical difference between the robust public option and negotiated rates. It's just a difference in money.
End
no
game.
Philosophical
right.
difference.
End game.
So,
I don't believe
right.
it for a minute.
Right. So really,
we got to go, Todd.
Okay, go ahead. Bye.
Takeaway's Washington correspondent reporting from Washington on the public option. End game? I don't think so.
Well, now let's talk about the end game, maybe for huge, gigantic banks. Dan Gross is joining us now. He's a columnist for Slate and Newsweek, filling in for Louise Storage this morning. Dan, we're hearing all about banks being too big to fail and us, the Obama administration, maybe dismantling them or respecting a bill today. Do we know what's going to be in it?
Well, the word is that Barney Frank, who is the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, may be introducing legislation this week to deal with institutions that are too big to fail. One way of thinking about it is that in the future, the hope is that we will eat these giant banks before they eat us. And the idea is to set up what they're calling a sort of living will. That is to say, there was no regime or no process, no protocol for dealing with the failure of gigantic institutions that, you know, the FDIC's deposit fund couldn't handle, companies like Citigroup and Bank of America.
So how are they going to do it? Are they going to split off the trading from the consumer products? How are they going to split these things up?
Well, that is the devil, of course, is always in the details. I think the main thing to look for is forcing companies that are that big to put more money aside, to hold greater reserves. The idea being, you know, we have these standards. If you're a bank, you have to hold $1 in reserves for every, you know, $10 or $15 you have in loans outstanding. And, you know, that works well for a small bank because if they fail, the FDIC can handle it. Doesn't work as well for something like Citigroup. So one of the things we're talking about is requiring them to hold more money. That has kind of two functions. One is, A, they will have more money so that they are less likely to fail, but that also provides an incentive for banks not to get too big. In other words, if you change the regulations, you change the structure, I think the idea is that you provide them with reasons why they shouldn't get that big, financial reasons why they shouldn't get that big.
Because they need all the money to back it up,
won't be in the business of saying, you get smaller.
Okay, so Dan, one of the questions we're asking all of our listeners today is, are you living without a credit card? Have you ever thought about living without a credit card? And what would it take to get you to give up your plastic? So do you live without credit, Dan?
We no. Everybody has.
In a word, no.
And what would it take? Would you ever consider living without a credit card?
Well, if my company would just pay for all my expenses instead of having me have a company-issued credit card, maybe I wouldn't need one.
So, Slate and Newsweek, you could have Dan give up his plastic if you just didn't make him cover his own travel expenses. Thanks so much, Dan Gross.
Thank you.
I'm tempted to say help Dan Gross at 8778 in my take. But Ibrahim Abdelmateen, Takeaway Sports contributor, has our next takeout. Boy, the Yankees clinch their place in the World Series in Game 6 last night. They beat the California Angels 5-2. By my calculation, they spent $200 million just this year alone. 40 World Series for the Yankees, 26 championships. Is this a good business model, Ibrahim?
I talked to my dad, and I was like, Daddy, are you watching the game? And he was like, I can't watch the game. It's too stressful. And I think that that's the case for a lot of Yankees fans, because we did put a lot into this, and now finally, after 6 years, we got the result we wanted.
And I guess the question is, are the Yankees favored going up against the Philadelphia Phillies on Wednesday night, or what would you say?
I think most observers say that they have a better team overall, but it won't be the kind of series where it's like 1- and 2-run games. It's going to be like 8-6, 9-6, 10-7.
A lot of bats,
a lot of hitters. That's the challenge that you have. You have good starting pitching, and you have weaker bullpens in both of these teams.
CC Sabathia was the MVP of the American League Championship Series, the ace pitcher for the Yankees. I guess Alex Rodriguez is maybe hoping he'll be the MVP in the World Series if Ryan Howard doesn't beat him.
That's true. The one person you could give a nod to for the Angels was a guy named Jeff Mathis. Mathis was pretty much lights out. Every time he was at the plate for the Angels, he hit a double or a triple. He drove in runs. He was the catcher, and he didn't let a lot of balls go past him. So you got to give a nod to Jeff Mathis.
And the Angels really thought this was going to be a year for them, and it's a real heartbreak for them.
Definitely, in light of what happened with the tragedy of Nick Adenhart in the beginning of the year.
Indeed.
So we hope that folks remember him at the end of the season, just because his untimely demise and early in the season gave them the energy to move forward.
Angels will be back, that's for sure. Let's talk football in the brief seconds that we have. There are three teams undefeated at this stage of the season. That's a first for the NFL.
I think what's really happening right now is that in the AFC, the picture is really difficult. In the Colts, you have
undefeated.
You have the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are playing like they're undefeated
and beat an undefeated team yesterday.
Correct.
The Minnesota Vikings.
And now the Vikings' demise means that there's only one team left in NFC, and that's the New Orleans Saints. Who
they
are
look
dangerous.
Fantastic. Drew Brees has got to be the best football player in the NFL.
And
right
I'm a little annoyed right now. He is the best football player in the NFL. I'm a little
annoyed.
The
Dolphins did not win.
Exactly.
I knew they wouldn't.
Sorry.
I knew it.
Ibrahim Abdelmateen, Takeaway Sports contributor and part-time bookie for Celeste Headley. Thank you very much.
Hey, I get $15 off this.